Right. So I just want to say how excited I am that there's a community of practice called Tropical Legumes at our society. It's really exciting. And that capacity building is one of their first symposiums. So I consider capacity for legume adaptive science and education kind of the core of what I try to do. And here I'm making a case it's a classy approach. So it really takes three investments, in my view: science, people, and adaptation. Because if we're going to hit the rubber, meet the road, if we're going to take science and make differences in people's lives, we have to do adaptive research along the way, incorporating indigenous knowledge, as we heard a minute ago. So capacity in my research group is, I'm going to particularly talk about, is in terms of agricultural systems analysis, in terms of defining niches, diversifying options, which is why I work a lot with breeders and soil scientists, testing those options, and supporting co-learning. So let's give some examples of that. I think that again, tropical legumes are at the core of the grand challenges that this next generation, all of you in the back there, that you face, right? Is how are we going to feed the world in a sustainable way? And we have climate change and market dynamics, all these things are facing these farmers in Zimbabwe. And legumes really can, I feel, are core to the sustainability aspect of that. And have been somewhat underinvested in. But not all legumes are the same, right? We have annuals for food and income. Very, very important. Beans, peanuts, soybeans. But these only grow usually for 4 months. So how are we going to capture sunlight? How are we going to fix nitrogen if we don't consider perennials? So agroforestry systems have been very important for considering how to improve, rehabilitate soils, improve carbon sequestration. They're part of one of the approved approaches, part of the many little hammers to improve carbon capture. But my lab group has focused a lot on what we call multi-pulses. So the vines, the shrubs that grow for a year or 2 years, they give us both services. They give us income, food, but they also rehabilitate the soils so that cereals like maize and sorghum can respond to fertilizer and other inputs. So if we're going to rehabilitate soils, we need to have cover crops that also produce food or are something to sell. Otherwise, we can't expect some of the poorest people in the world to really be able to adopt these. So pigeon pea, you may know, is something I'm obsessed with. I think my students sometimes count 10, 15 pictures of pigeon pea per lecture, even if we're talking about different topics. But there's more than pigeon pea. These resilient multipulses also include things like runner beans, if you're particularly in cold areas, lab, indigenous legume that's grown throughout much of Africa, widely adapted. My student, Allison Nort, will have a poster this afternoon at 4 on lab, a G-by-E experiment in Tanzania with our colleagues there. And also another student, Lexa Wickham, since we're talking capacity, you guys are in the room. She has a poster that will be next to Allison's on looking at legumes in sustainability in Uganda. So I think this is a coming topic, and it's quite exciting to see this. But we need more genetic options. We have to work with breeders and try and get investments. The science can't go forward until we have developed improved varieties of these. We also need geographers. So this is from Joe Messina's lab group, who I work closely with at the Center for Global Change. We're trying to see where this sweet spot of pigeon pea can grow and maize needs improved soil organic matter. So in the dark green is where you have the best combination. Currently, pigeon pea grows here, but we are seeing many of these green spots in the center there where we really want to see deployment of these different pigeon pea systems that we've been working on to try and improve the overall livelihood strategies for farmers in those areas. So this is just a suitability map to map that niche. Another important, I think many people might see themselves here, whether you're a soil scientist or social scientist, because this is the sustainable intensification indicators approach. There's going to be a launch at 5, a reception with food for the grad students in the room. Anyways, it will be room 8 and 9 next to here, where we'll be looking at these different domains. I think this is kind of getting back to Dr. Westgate's approach, that the fact that we need to think about, when we think sustainability as a crop physiologist or a soil scientist, we're thinking about things like legume residue production or stability of maize yield. But we also need to be thinking about whether women farmers prefer this or whether it changes soil nitrogen as we claim it does. So this is just a way to codify, kind of like a lab manual. Here's a simple, quick and dirty way that agronomists can try and think about, is this sustainable, not just in terms of yield, although that has to be paramount, maize yield, legume yield, but all these other, you know, economics, soil nitrogen change, whether women like this technology or not. So our doubled up legume system with pitch and pea in it, rotated with maize, a little bit of fertilizer, is more sustainable. It's in the dark green in many of these domains. But if you really need to maximize maize, you have a very small yield area, small farm, then probably you need to go with maize fertilizer, which you'll need more fertilizer. They both have fertilizer in it, but the maize alone, obviously, it doesn't have the legume fixing nitrogen, so you need to use a lot more. So this is just looking at trade-offs and thinking about the whole system. So this is one of the ways that science can contribute to the conversation, but I think core to this talk today is thinking about people. Farmers, extension, scientists, how do we improve their capacity? So I've been very fortunate in our group to be funded as part of Feed the Future. So we have USAID support working closely with IATA in Malawi. In the center of Malawi, we have this project called Africa Rising. So research and sustainable intensification for the next generation. Again, about capacity building. We selected these sites, and we have an expansion now into five other sites, to be a gradient from marginal area to a mesic area. These are different agroecologies. So what we learn about from our field experimentation, from our modeling, from our local capacity building, can then have implications for recommendations. So you have to select them originally very carefully and purposefully if you're going to do research on them. So we've involved hundreds of farmers, dozens of extension, national scientists at Lilongwe University of Agriculture, and international scientists at IATA and others. So what are we doing at this site? We're doing action research. So we have to plan, we have to act, and then we have to reflect, and it's an iterative process. So unlike breeders who can come up with genetics and deploy them, agronomists have to keep reflecting because it's always about local. We have to support adaptation. So we have scientists modeling and looking at the literature and generating new knowledge to say what are the best options. We have action, new genetic options, doubled up legume systems and others, testing them out with farmers. Then we have reflection, especially extension, civil society, engaged policymakers in, are these good options or not? So this is at the core of our capacities to build capacity in all three groups. So to give an example, scientists need to test to make sure we're not deploying some kind of system that actually can support reductions in soil organic matter. We need to make sure that if we say these are sustainable, are they or not? And one of the challenges has been that sometimes we've done things like in Malawi, when I first came, they were promoting a non-fixing legume as an agroforestry system. Well, it did very well when the soil was high in nitrogen on the research station. You deploy that on farm, and it was just competing for nitrogen in the same pool as maize. So we have to be careful that what we think is sustainable is actually. In our case, we're also supporting farmer experimentation. So these farmers have their own experiments, and they're trying out different legumes and in different combinations. Maize legume intercrops. So through this process, we're able to follow them and see, do they use intercrops? Are they using soil legumes? What sort of varieties are they picking up? And how are they investing? Are they investing fertilizers, manures, and other types of agronomy? And finally, coming up with recommendations, working with extension, where can pigeon pea be deployed? Currently, as I said, it's grown in the south, and that's where the markets are, but it turns out it's actually some very ideal areas where pigeon pea, at least the newer varieties, could be grown in the middle and even in the north. And so we're trying to support catalyzing farmers and extension, trying these out in new areas. And we have had a lot of successes, but I will point out it took 20 years. So the long-term investment in Michigan State, before that ICRSAT, and our current work with IATA, these relationships with national colleagues and with farmers and extension in particular areas have been very, very important to the success. Because you really, in the end, have to bring together investment in people in the best science to build this adaptation capacity. And agronomy really requires that. You have to have local knowledge, and that means investing in again, this action research approach where we have iterative co-learning, diagnosis, on-farm best bet options, seeing what niche they might fit, and then over time, it's really important to come up with better bet options. So we've been talking about pigeon pea, but now we have a range of varieties that have different growing degree growth habits that are combined with other legumes for this doubled up legume system to rehabilitate the soil and still provide two crops. So we need to over time, but those don't work everywhere. It turns out actually in more better rainfall areas, sometimes they outgrow and take up too much water before May. So we have to not do a silver bullet approach, but support adaptation. I also want to point out that even if we're soil scientists or social science, we have to remember that we work with NGOs and others to support utilization. Without information about nutrition, supporting changes in behavior, and you'll notice we're not gender biased. We also are teaching men about nutrition because they also want to do recipes and want to help make sure their children are healthy. We don't just work with the young mothers, because actually they often don't have a choice about what they serve. You know, we have to involve the whole family. And so we work with NGOs that also believe in that too, that whole family approach. So this is work by Krista Isaacs in Rwanda. So again, we have to include farmer preferences. And it's not just male-headed and female-headed households. In this case, farmers were actually looking for different plant traits within an intercrop. So they wanted certain varieties for intercrops versus other varieties for sole crops. So this work shows that farmers actually are physiologists. Some of them actually understand that you need certain... Oh, Chris Isaac's here, so I hope I'm explaining your work right, that we did. And that there are certain adaptive qualities. Some varieties are more adaptive than others. So we have to understand that farmers have a lot of knowledge, and we need to give them options to be able to expand what they can do with that. And breeders have been not reluctant somewhat to take on because of the high G by E, the variability. But if they work with farmers, farmers are willing to take on the interactions of genotype and this environment of intercrop. Finally, I want to give you an example of one direction that our lab group is now going, where we're trying to work with apps. So apps that in particular provide information for farmers, because we want to be careful not to go down the route. A somewhat sarcastic young, very young man has put together something called Yet Another Agricultural App, has 200 apps there. Yap, look it up. But this app we think has promise. It is LandPKS, it's Land Potential, Jeff Herrick's group, and at a USDA. Basically saying, okay, if you dig a hole, and we hope that this becomes the new thing, that farmers and extension go out, dig a hole, put this information, hand texture your soil, put it into this app. It will tell you something about probability of what parent material you have in your area. Then, from that, you know a bit more information. So, we've now got an idea of soil. Now, the part that we're starting to add is, what are the options for that soil type? This is the niche work, as I was saying. To be able to come up with hyperlocal recommendations, we need to have that local capacity. We need the science to come up with best bets. And we need to give that into the hands of locally trained people. So this is from Malawi, Dr. Vimbai Chibonyo, our postdoc based in Malawi, and an enumerator there that we work with. So in this case, okay, you have bulk density issues, maybe a high population of pigeon pea could help remediate. I told you it comes back to pigeon pea. Rotate with hybrid maize and fertilizer. Then the part that's not yet in the app, but they're moving towards, is then you could then upload your experience with that so that you could get people sharing their local adaptation, how, what they tried out. And then, so that there would be an opportunity then to keep fine-tuning and getting action research going on in a very local way. One of the challenges with the soil fertility maps that we've tried to work on in Africa for many, many years, since the early 90s, is that they're not hyper-local. They're like 1 kilometer scale if you're lucky. They're all based on, you know, 30-kilometer grids and interpolation. But we all know that every farm is half a hectare, and we need local information. So that's one of the big challenges out there, and I hope that tropical legumes and the class of 2030 will be part of that, and I hope that you're thinking about how you might be part of helping give education, support new knowledge, working with her and others and her generation. And this is our website, Global Change Science, East Africa Node, and I hope that you'll join us in this adventure. Thank you. One question? Yes.
In one figure you had, was it mother?
And baby Charles?
Yeah, what was that?
Okay. So that's what I'm probably most known as, the mother of the mother baby trials. It was actually something I came up with to support agronomists trying out beyond research stations. I called it central satellite trial design, which went nowhere, and a farmer in Malawi said, no, the central trial, which is replicated on farm or on a research station, that's the mother. And then we are the babies, and people proudly say I'm a baby trial farmer, and we have literally 1,200 of them now over time. And then we see what experimentation they do. We rank things with them. And it's breeders like Marianne Bezinger who took it and has used that basically to expand her ability to look at G by E over many, many countries. There's something like 30 countries where breeders use this and just a handful of agronomists. I'm hoping someday, because how can agronomists understand farmer ranking of technologies unless the farmer tried it themselves? That's the whole point of mother baby trial. It's just a name for a trial design. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, there you are. Okay, our next speaker is Stephen Bowen. He is a legume systems agronomist with IITA based in Mozambique. He works on identification and physiological and management constraints to soybean and cowpea productivity. He's been responsible for the successful soybean introduction into northern Mozambique, and he also does participatory research. And when I first met Stephen, he told me that he does internships with local students, and that he always chooses all the girls first. So I really like that. So please welcome Dr. Bowen.